Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're kindly joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Hello, Jonathan. Good to be back.
So, as usual, we have a number of equities that we're going to be discussing later on in the podcast, but we will start off with touching on markets, particularly the major indices around the world. So, I mean, Alan, looking at the FTSE 100, relatively flat, we have seen a push higher towards the beginning of the week and the end of last week. However, we're still relatively range-bound. At current levels, we're not seeing the volatility that we've become accustomed to over the past year. I mean, much of this is down to hopes around the reopening of the global economy as vaccines are rolled out. But there is an element I feel, Alan, that we've seen a strong rally that's largely priced in the short term. Any positivity or a lot of the positivity that we could see in a reopening and what that means for equities. So, I mean, looking at what the market's done, and I think sort of speaking to people out there, there is concerns now coming in to markets. We saw, of course, that the rising bond yields derail the equity market or the tech rally. Over in US equity markets. That's died down now, and we're starting to see names such as Tesla, Amazon and Apple move up to highs again. But I think that there's a more deep-seated concern out there, Alan, that there's simply too much money sloshing around in these markets at the moment due to high levels of quantitative easing. We've, of course, got the meeting with the Federal Reserve and the results from that this evening, which is going to be interesting to see what their views are on the economy. One of the other things that's going to be very interesting with this, Alan, is the views on interest rates. And I just want to get your view here as well. I mean, there is a school of thought out there that we're going to see a level of inflation when economies truly do open up again, which could cause sharp increases in rates and obviously real rates in the economy, which could derail any further expansion. I mean, is this something that you would be concerned about at this point in time if you were a holder of blue chip equities? Or do you think that the central banks are going to be standing ready to pump more money into the system, and in actual fact, they're going to hold off for as long as possible before they start to amend interest rates to the upside?
I think it's always a balancing act, isn't it? You, on the one hand, you have the threat of inflation. We've seen rising bond yields signal that, and of course, a correction in the market and a big correction in technology stocks. But on the other hand, you've got global economies coming out of this COVID crisis. Company staff and employees have been on furlough schemes. And of course, now these people return to work, and these people still have borrowings, they still have mortgages, they still have bills to pay. And any sharp increase in interest rates is going to act as a double whammy, because of course some companies won't survive the COVID crisis. The furlough scheme will end, and they'll come out of it, and their business will either have gone or be dramatically reduced. So of course they will go to the wall. So I think the governments will look at it and they'll take the decision to continue supporting the economy, simply because there's any exposure of the population to sharp interest rate increases will, I think, derail any recovery completely. In time, there will be interest rate increases, but the governments around the world will need to see how this recovery progresses, because it will be shaky. Make no mistake about it. You know, once furlough schemes are withdrawn and we get back to, or we try to get back to normality, it will be a shaky process and we will see further market corrections as we go forward. So those actions, they may well come at some point, but I don't expect any change in interest rates in the near term. I simply expect, and of course, markets currently waiting on the US Fed decision this evening on monetary policy going forward. And I expect to see continued support, certainly from the US government and the UK government and governments across Europe and around the world.
So when we're looking at equity markets now, Alan, do you think it's simply a story of don't fight the Fed? You know, if they come out this evening and say, we're going to continue with our asset purchase program, we're not going to be changing rates in the short term or even maybe in the medium term, that it's just a case that, as we've seen over the last decade, if we're seeing strong levels of money being created and pumped into the system through quantitative easing, that the way to play that is simply be in equities, hold equities, and ride out the accommodative monetary policy that we're likely to see in the medium term.
I think that's the case. Yeah, that's my view totally. I think there are so many variables at play, but as I said at the start, it is a balancing act, and you know, as companies come off furlough, we're going to see companies go to the wall. The leisure industry, there'll be a lot of casualties in that sector. But then we're seeing strength in resources and energy new initiatives there. We're seeing new economies emerging, strength in technology, and of course in the crypto and decentralized, the world of crypto and decentralized finance. So there are new opportunities emerging that will, to some extent, offset the damage that's been, or the havoc that's been wrought across the more conventional sectors. So there'll be weakness in some sectors, strength in others. Overall, I don't expect to see too much change going forward. And believe me, the US Fed and the Chancellor here in the UK won't want to see any changes either. They'll be seeking to maintain the status quo for as long as possible.
Indeed. That's much the way of my thinking as well. I think any hints of change from the central banks at this point in time will have severe ramifications for financial markets. So my view would also be that they stay the course. If they don't, things could get interesting pretty quickly. I mean, we touched on there, Alan, on inflation. One of the best ways to play increased in inflation or anticipated inflation is, of course, commodities. We've discussed in some detail the case for a new super cycle in commodities. So we won't go into too much detail there around specific commodities, but I think that sets us up quite nicely for the first equity that we're going to discuss today, in Power Metal Resources, one that we've touched on previously. Paul Johnson has appeared on a UK Investor Magazine virtual conference in recent months, so a company that we do know well, and I know a lot of listeners will be familiar with. But what is the latest updates from them? We've seen a very nice increase in the share price in the last few days, Alan. What's been driving that?
Well, there have been a number of developments. I mean, the great thing about Power Metal Resources is it's still a tiny company by any stretch of the imagination in the market that it's in. So with a market cap of about 26 million, it really is a micro cap. As with the larger mining companies, you know, the giants like Rio Tinto, Billiton, and others, they have a vast range of mining projects, both at exploration stage, feasibility stage, and then, of course, full production stage. So Power Metal is, if you like, one of those, a Rio Tinto, scaled down massively with a series of projects all at the preliminary stage. But it's advancing those projects well. And I think, you know, we mentioned Paul Johnson. Of course, Paul is, very shrewd financially, and he's managed the company finances very carefully. There's a big pot of warrant cash that's come into the company over the past 6 to 8 months. Some 2.8 million has arrived in the company coffers. So it's given the company plenty of funds to continue the drilling programs that are underway at the various projects, and also the to buy new licenses and to expand existing territory. So I'm not going to go into detail because we'd be here all day if I spoke about all the projects. Suffice to say, there's a big joint venture with Red Rock Resources, the Red Rock Australasia project in Victoria and Australia. And of course, Victoria project, the Victoria Goldfields are currently very much in focus with investors. There's a hugely profitable mine in the region, the Fosterville Gold Mine, also the Ballarat Gold Mine, and Power Metal, and also, of course, ECR Minerals, another company we've spoken about, have interests, license interests all over the region. We know that Red Rock Australasia, the joint venture between Power Metal Resources and Red Rock Resources, will be spun off separately as a separate IPO on the Canadian exchange. So that's something very much that will add value to the Power Metal coffers when it gets there. We then moved to Botswana, where there are a number of projects, the Ditau Camp Rare Earths project. That's a joint venture there. The Botswana Kalahari Copper Belt project. We had an update this morning with Kavango Resources. And of course, there'll be Kenny Resources, which will spin off those interests into another listed venture. And of course, the Malopo Farms nickel copper project as well. So Power Metal has all exposure to all of the precious metals, all of the precious metal group, and all of the key base metals that are used in construction, and of course to power the electric vehicle and the new emerging giga battery industry across the world. We then move to Canada. We have the Silver Peak project, and the company announced on Monday that it's going to spin off the Canada Silver Peak project, which is based in the former Eureka Silver Mine, or based in the region of the former Eureka Silver Mine in British Columbia. That will be spun off. Power Metal have now paid up completely for the interest or the option to increase the interest, owns 30% of that interest. That will come to market later in the year, also on the TSXV. A cobalt project in Cameroon, another copper and cobalt project in the DRC. In Tanzania, going back to Africa, we have, of course, the joint venture with Katoro Gold, the Haneti project, which is a nickel, gold and platinum group metal project. Katoro Gold owns 65%, Power Metal owns 35%. And then finally, we have the USA, back to the USA, we have the Alamo Gold project, where the company owns up to 75%, or will own up to 75%, has the option to increase up to 75% once certain steps have been taken. Lots of drilling underway at present. We're seeing assay results coming back. We're seeing further progress. I'm going to go back to Canada. I didn't mention the Hemlo Gold project, and this is a project. I did a detailed talk on this, of course, on another channel, where we discussed the Schreiber Hemlo Gold Belt, which is on the north coast of Lake Superior. It's a hugely fertile region for mining. We have, of course, the Barrick Gold Hemlo Gold Mine there, and Power Metal has acquired four licenses across that region. So very active region, and we're expecting to hear further news of that during the year. So you can hear the number of projects that the company is involved in, the amount of interest it has, and it still has a market cap of 26 million. If any one of these projects moves to feasibility stage, it's going to dwarf the current market cap. And that's the exciting thing about it. I think at this level, it offers so many opportunities for growth. And it's almost like a fund of mining opportunities in mining. You know, you've got these projects all at various stages, set to come to fruition. And of course, there's a very, in each at each project, there's a very effective team on the ground, a project manager overall that reports back to the central headquarters of Power Metals in the UK. So very exciting year ahead for Power Metal. We've 4 announcements already this week, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more to come in the coming days.
So, Andy, you mentioned there Power Metal Resources acts as a fund of sorts, investment vehicle for mining projects. I mean, do you feel that there is an intention to develop any of these projects to the stage that Power Metal themselves start to earn significant revenue from production? Or do you think it's always going to be the case that the deal making is going to be the main driver of the business going forward?
Well, I think Paul's a very shrewd deal maker, as we've already seen. I mean, it's a bit of a standing joke. I mean, Paul seems to work 25 hours a day, 8 days a week. You know, it's there is so much going on. But I'm sure if one of the projects presents an easy route to production, he may well look at that. And of course, going back to, I mentioned ECR Minerals operating in Victoria in Australia. Of course, ECR had their own drill rig. They have something like $4 million in the bank, and they have a headquarters in Bendigo in the centre of Australia. So they can actually go ahead and undertake their own work. They set up a lab at Bendigo. They'll be undertaking their own assay work. So they can actually do the whole thing themselves. Power Metal is more of an investor, but as I say, I think Paul will assess each project on its merits, and if there's an opportunity to build a mine, or there's a quick route to build a mine and get the stuff out of the ground, I'm sure he would look at that too.
I mean, with these projects, and I mean, just want to take it back now to the commodity market that we were discussing then. I mean, how much do you feel the share price is influenced by moves and positive and negative moves in the prices of commodities? Or is this really a stock that you should be looking at purely for the underlying deal-making potential value that's unlocked by these deals? Or do you still think this is a company that could be played on stronger and hopes of stronger commodity prices going forwards?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, all of the mining companies are affected by commodity prices to a greater or lesser extent, and just as oil companies are affected by the oil price, that won't change going forward. But the fundamental and macro backdrop, I think, for commodities, with the amount of money that's been spent on COVID and with the amount of money that will still need to be spent, you know, we were talking earlier about what the US is spending on easing and money printing just to keep things or maintain the status quo. That provides, it's almost a perfect storm for commodities, that because they're tangible assets, they have a value, and investors in particular, in times of uncertainty or if there's an uncertain outlook, they will turn to precious metals as a safe haven. So certainly for gold and the precious metals, there's lots of strength and support there. But I think if you then look at the metals for the battery industry, you know, lithium, of course, copper, nickel, cobalt, all of those, graphite, they're all key constituents of batteries going forward. We've got this battery revolution taking place, and of course the EV revolution with electric vehicles. Manufacturers like Ford stating they will be fully electric by 2030. You know, Ford is a massive motor vehicle manufacturer, one of the largest in the world. So that's a huge step for them to take. So Jaguar, of course, are going fully electric by 2025. So with all of these companies changing their production processes, sourcing the raw material, if there's any supply squeeze for any of these commodities, and indeed there are expectations that there will be in the next 2 to 3 years, then the commodity prices will rise. So any companies holding those assets will rise accordingly. But I think the backdrop, in summary, for the mining stocks for the coming years is very strong indeed, and I'm talking, you know, probably up to 5 to 7 years.
Fantastic. I'd have to agree that the strength going forward, not only due to the potential inflation hedge, but of course the underlying economic expansion, especially as we're seeing in China, very strong figures we've seen in China just this week suggest demand for commodities is going to remain stable and increase going forward. So certainly an interesting sector to be watching there. Another interesting sector and one that's very difficult to ignore at this point in time, Alan, we're going to move on and discuss now the blockchain, Bitcoin, grabbing headlines still. We saw Bitcoin go through $60,000 just recently. The March higher continues. I think to some extent this plays into the amount of money that's sloshing around in the system, element of speculation there, pushing prices higher. But notwithstanding, any concerns about that, it's certainly an asset class that's growing, and we've touched on Argo blockchain in recent weeks and the operations there. But we're going to now touch on Coincilium, Alan. So they are operating within the crypto and blockchain area, listed on the Aquis exchange. What's the latest update from them?
Okay, so I interviewed Malcolm Palais, the executive chairman at Coincilium, and that interview was published, in fact, this morning. So if you go to the brand UK or my Twitter handle, the Novus Comms Twitter handle, you'll be able to see that interview. But Coincilium have just a bit of history. They were the first ever blockchain IPO back in 2015 on what was then the ISDX, or it was either ISDX or Next Exchange, and of course it's now the Aquis market. They are dual listed. In fact, they also have a listing on the OTC venture market in the US. But Coincilium are a blockchain and open finance venture builder, and they moved to Brazil a couple of years ago. The reasons being that there's clear regulatory certainty for the group operating there, and of course we know that as cryptocurrencies have developed around the world, some governments have been fairly anti, and it's been a difficult path. But Gibraltar has very much created a solid platform for companies in this space to operate. So Coincilium has evolved. Following the IPO, it made a series of investments, and some of those were very successful, and they've had very solid returns. As at the start of February, the crypto assets, excluding cash in the company, were circa $2 million. And of course, a lot of that was driven by the strength in Bitcoin. But the company also holds Rift tokens, as a result of previous investments it's made going forward. But it took the decision last summer to pivot the business and move into becoming a venture builder in the blockchain and, of course, the non-fungible token space, NFTs. Non-fungible tokens, effectively, it's a technology to digitize assets. And if you've been following markets over the past few months, you won't have failed to have seen some incredible stories coming out of this. With of course cryptocurrency, we have we've got Bitcoin, we've got Ethereum, we've got Litecoin, Zcash, and a raft of other tokens that have value out there. But non-fungible tokens are a different ballgame altogether, in that assets such as art, music, postage stamps, and a whole range of assets can be digitized. And of course, using blockchain, which creates that immutable record, you've got that absolute authenticity and proof of ownership. And that really is the difference. So Coincilium have set up, there's a memorandum of understanding with Endorse, one of its earlier investments, to set up a lab and technology business in Gibraltar to develop smart contract smart contracts for the NFT space. The company has announced its first deal at the start of the year, which was a deal with the Gibraltar Philatelic Bureau to produce a crypto counter or an NFT counterpart for a limited edition postage stamp, and through a Coincilium and a payment company based in Gibraltar, you can actually use Ethereum or Bitcoin to actually purchase the stamp. So these go on sale on the 17th of May, but I think reservations can be made starting next month. So you can actually buy the stamp with a digital counterpart. It's been done before. The Austrian Post Office pioneered a similar scheme, and that was very successful. So so this is the first step along the road of what we expect will be a series of contracts building NFT solutions for companies offering different asset classes. Very exciting year ahead. And of course, we're going to discuss the NFT market in a minute, Jonathan. But for Coincilium, it's been an incredible 2 weeks, really. I mean, the company shares were trading at 2.7p on December the 18th. And this morning, they've hit just over 20p, 21p, in fact. And that's largely on the back of the announcement yesterday that in regard to the Gibraltar Philatelic Bureau, the crypto postage stamp issue starting in May. But the company is well funded. It has its crypto assets cleared at the start of February. As I say, we're just under 2 million, not including cash in the bank. And then in March, at the start of March, of course, there was a further 250,000 raised in warrant exercises. So the company is fully funded for all its activities and work that's scheduled through to this time next year, which of course is very encouraging indeed. A very strong board. Eddie Travier is the CEO. Eddie Travier is an expert in the blockchain field. He launched Seedcoin a couple of years ago, and he has a lot of expertise in the private equity market. And of course, Malcolm Pelle, the exec chairman, was effectively the founder of Coincilium and has driven it through as executive chairman since 2015. Also interesting to note that Craig Brown, the CEO of ECR Minerals, is on the board as an unexec too. So, you know, Craig clearly sees the benefit and strength in this sector. So that really is the investment case, I think, for Coincilium. Currently got a market cap of just under 30 million sterling, but as we've seen, you know, we spoke about Argo Blockchain and where that was a year ago, you know, with a market cap, I think, in the 20, 30 million pound region. And of course, Argo Blockchain now has a market cap of about 880 to 900 million. So the potential is all there. And indeed, once Coincilium start to make progress, you know, I think the prospect for movement over the year is very high indeed.
Yes. I mean, certainly getting into the NFT market is very much going with the trends within blockchain at the moment. So going to be a company to watch developments of going forward this year. So, and as you said there, we'll touch on now on NFTs to try and sort of expand on the details there for maybe people that haven't too much knowledge on this new area of the blockchain. Well, when I say new, it's been going on for years, but it's become popular relatively recently within the last 6 months or so. So, I mean, with these, I mean, it's, you know, people will be listening to this, sort of familiar with Coincilium and then the Aquis Exchange, but when we start talking about NFTs, maybe don't have too much in the way of knowledge there, Alan. I mean, just to sort of break it down, what are the main mechanics behind an NFT and how do they work?
Well, so NFTs, as I said, it's the digitization of an asset, and of course that can be a video clip, it can be a piece of digital art. Or as we saw last week, it sold at a stroke. I think one of the key issues for artists in the music industry. But of course, this can easily apply to film as well and other areas of digital art. But the Kings of Leon, of course, the rock band, famously, it was announced and it got a lot of coverage in the press that their new album was to be released as an NFT. And of course, this means with the NFT, there's the opportunity to purchase limited edition vinyl and concert seats as well, when of course we can all get back and go to rock concerts again. So that's one example. And then of course the artist Beeple, and I watched a video of this guy, and he's a young fella. He put up, he said he got into or he realized what the NFT space was about in October last year. Sold one piece of art, I think, for $150,000, which blew his mind completely. Then sold another piece of art for, I think, $3 or $4 million, which blew his mind again. And now he's just sold this what is effectively a digital collage for $66 million. I mean, the sums of money are just staggering. But I think we discussed this earlier, and of course, a lot of people have crypto accounts where maybe they bought Bitcoin or Ethereum a few years ago, and they've got these amounts of money. So they see something's up for sale for 2 or 3 Ethereum and don't think too much about the actual sums involved. But it is an awful lot of money. So of course, Beeple has done very well from it. But there are so many other examples too. I mean, Captain Kirk of Star Trek fame, William Shatner, of course, decided to grab some of his memories and put them into NFT format. So his little video clips and clips of film can be bought and basically traded like playing cards or Pokemon cards. I think there are some more down to earth examples too. My daughter's husband has got interested in the sector, and he bought an NBA playing card a couple of days ago for $5. And it's a clip of a basketball being net being scored, or gold, or whatever it is. It's terrible. I should know that. But he paid $5 for it. The NBA still own the rights to the clip, but of course, within the context of the NBA world, if somebody wants to buy it, he can put it up for sale and hopefully get a lot more for it. And again, a colleague of his, an artist that has a big Instagram profile, put an early JPEG up onto the Foundation app. And I think 18 or 20 hours later, certainly within the day, somebody paid 2 Ethereum for it. So that's, of course, about £2,500.
Yes, I mean, I've dipped my toe into the market more of an experiment than anything to see how it works. When you're seeing stories such as the Beeple one and of the art sold for $60 million at Christie's, it does raise some eyebrows there on what's happening within this market. But I mean, Alan, do you think this is a craze that's a bit of a fashion? We've obviously had huge success in Bitcoin, and what's the next crypto and blockchain asset, and everyone's just jumped onto these NFTs, or do you think this is actually something that's here to stay and will become a fundamental part of creative arts going forward? We've obviously discussed art pieces there, discussed music. Is this something that's mainly for speculation, or could this actually be inbuilt into the distribution of the creative arts going forwards?
Well, I think it's going to be a key part of it, because if you think about it, certainly if you're a struggling artist, let's say you're based in a remote part of the country, and you want people to access your work, but you've got to travel to show it and this, that, and the other. Of course, none of that matters anymore. You can sell to somebody in Timbuktu who sees it online, and they pay you in Bitcoin or Ethereum, and the money's there instantly, and that's what's so exciting for this. It's absolutely compelling, and I think I think the NFT market is going to be infinitely bigger than the cryptocurrency market for that reason, because there are literally the number of applications are almost limitless. There are so many assets that could potentially be digitized. and added to this. But I think particularly for artists and musicians to an extent as well, because it solves the issue of piracy with streaming music and everything else at a stroke. So I think it solves so many issues, and there must be so many people that maybe have got involved in art at some stage and probably have old JPEGs or bits and pieces that they did previously. It opens up the possibility that they could sell that and maybe bring in some money that wasn't expected. So in a sense, we were talking earlier about the shortfall in other economies or other areas of the economy, and of course the high street is on its knees, as we know. But this could well go some way towards replacing some of that lost income for people that would otherwise have been working in a different career.
Yes, yes. And I mean, I think this is going to be an area that develops, and certainly some of the stories that are coming out of the sector and this new trend at the moment. I mean, just this morning, Sotheby's have announced they're going to be working with an artist on NFTs going forward. This is seemingly going mainstream. So we'll obviously be updating on this throughout the year as it progresses. So, I mean, Alan, just to finish off here, I mean, when you're looking at this, the sort of blockchain, and then you're looking at, cryptos, NFTs, I mean, in your view, which is the main story here? Is it the underlying technology of the blockchain, or is it the trading, investing and speculation of the assets and tokens that are based on the blockchain that most interests you at this point in time?
Well, I think it's the principle behind the whole crypto and NFT space. It's that decentralized finance, the distributed ledger technology, which effectively means that in a conventional world, you go and pay for something and the message goes to you, so you present your card, instantly goes out to the bank. Bank says, yes, that's fine. So it's one person saying it. So with DLT, distributed ledger technology, all of the people involved in that process have to give it the okay. So, but it's an instant process, but it's very safe and it's very, very secure. And I think that's what underpins this. Added to the fact that it is truly global, there are no borders to trade. There's none of that. So, just to go back to my earlier example, somebody living in a remote part of the world can speak to somebody else in a remote part of the world and transact instantly and instantly make money. And that's, I think, it's the principle that's going to drive it more than anything else. Of course, there'll be issues along the way, and when I spoke about this before, somebody came through on LinkedIn and we made a point about the verification of the process and the legal aspects, but these are all issues that will be resolved, and it's I find it incredibly exciting, and I think, like you, I'm going to have a little punt on a piece of art and see what happens.
Yes, certainly an exciting experiment to undertake, I think. At the moment, with what's going on, so. Alan, thank you very much. So just to recap there, before we discuss the NFT market, the two stocks that we touched on today were Power Metal Resources, ticker POW, and Coincilium, ticker COIN. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks again, Jonathan.
So just as a reminder before we go, we have the latest UK Investor Magazine virtual conference this next Tuesday coming up, 23rd of March, where there'll be a number of investment trusts presenting. There'll be AVI Global Trust, there will be the Temple Bar Investment Trust, and Vietnam Holdings. So if you haven't yet signed up for that, do check out the events tab on the UK Investor Magazine website, where you'll be able to register. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.